Raising Playful Tots, show number 133. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melissa, and welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours, so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you're new to the show, welcome and hello, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we play Lego, and we're making Lego puzzles today, thanks to playfullearning.net, and this was inspired by Kids Activities blog. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Nicole from Activity Mum all about what we can do with our little ones, you know, the babies and the toddlers. So if you missed that show and want some activity ideas and resources, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show, I'm sharing a challenge, so stay tuned. It's a focus on an area of play for all our little ones. So I hope you'll stick around, and I'll be right back after this short break.
Healthy, fresh Art Mart.
This week, enjoy Art Smart products your family will eat up. One serving of Van Gogurt contains the live and active culture your kids need. Buy one, get higher test scores free. And nothing satisfies a child's craving for self-expression like Tchaikovsky's Nutcrackers, now with more music and dance in every bite. Try original flavor or new Sugar Plum Fairy. Feed your kids the arts. Visit AmericansForTheArts.org to learn how. The arts. Ask for more.
When did it happen that we felt that we should be playing with our kids all of the time? No independent play, or very little independent play. When did that time actually happen? When we think of ourselves, if we play a little and it makes a difference, maybe if we play a lot together, it would make a lot of difference. Maybe that's what we thought. Is one type of play better than another? No worries if you realise that your play at home isn't that independent, because this is a show for you. I'm issuing you a challenge. That's all of you. For those of you that encourage independent play already, stay with us, because this isn't a challenge for independent play. It's for more independent play. And we probably could all do with a touch of that. Yeah, spring is the time that we usually think of spring cleaning. And autumn, we start nesting with warm soups and sticky toffee pudding. Oh, I do love sticky toffee pudding. It doesn't mean you don't clean at other times of the year or indulge in sticky toffee pudding and other comfort foods. The same happens in our play. We focus on certain areas, maybe because our child has entered a new stage, or we see a challenge and our focus is to change and progress all the way through it. So today we're looking at a focus, a challenge, a look at independent play. So this week's challenge is to set up our home for more independent play. There's lots of reasons independent play isn't an active example of play in our homes. There are lots of myths surrounding it. We can be our own worst enemy when it comes to doing something about these types of problems, because we see what other people are doing and feel, what can they do? We can't do those things. Instead, we should be focusing on what we're doing and what we can do a little bit more that's working, and those things that aren't working, getting them to work or changing that problem into a solution. Moving our step further, according to our kids. Thinking about their age, their stage, and exposure in mind. Because just think about it. Some children are really good at independent play. It doesn't matter what age they are, but if your child hasn't done very much independent play, they haven't had a lot of exposure to it, it's going to be really tricky for them to just go from dependent play, where we are playing with them all the time, to independent play. And so we can't beat ourselves up over that. We can, though, find a way to gradually introduce that to them. We can do that by remembering to gather around us sources of inspiration and ideas so that we can focus it on our family and how we need to do these things. So this show, I'll be referencing some of the wonderful places on the web, people who are highlighting resources and ideas about independent play. I would encourage you to check them out and find something of value to take away from each one. The first place to help you change your perspective on independent play is by Janet Langsberg. And you can find that article at janetlangsberg.com and you look for 7 myths that discourage independent play. Another place I'd like you to look at is spaghettiboxkids.com/blog. That article is all about structured versus unstructured play. Is that what really matters? So both of these articles get us thinking about play, the myths that go along with it, and that quirky title of structured and unstructured play. These are kind of foundational to how we will be doing our independent play. Once you've made this shift in thinking, we can see more time and opportunity for independent time. But like with so many things in early childhood, doing too much of any one thing isn't good for us as the parents or the carers, or good for the children at all. Yet the biggest obstacle is often when we take things out of the children's lives that they've been used to doing, whether they're good things or not so good things. And what do we replace it with? Well, how do we gradually replace it or withdraw it? And they are some of the really most painful times that we have. We've come across an article, we've read something, a friend has told us, we've noticed something, there's been something on the television that's drawn our attention to it, and we've thought, oh my goodness, we do that, I want to change, let's change, and we make the decision to do it almost straight away. And it's almost like a void. When you take something away from a child like that, it's very difficult for them to know what else to do because they're very used to doing that. It's also hard on us. We don't know what to fill that void with. So we're going to kind of talk about how we can do some changing when it comes to that. Most success with these transition times when we're trying something new, we're moving something that we used to do out of the regular routine that we're doing, it comes down to having a plan. So there's no time to think back to what's been missed, and we're actually having something to replace it. So there's a new habit and new choices. So this first step is debunking the myth that independent play isn't possible in your situation. I wrote a post over on Steady Mum about how to encourage independent toddler play. And you can find that at steadymum.com, and it's called How to Encourage Independent Toddler Play. And that really spoke to me at a time of balance that I was trying to achieve with my little guy. He had that needy, clingy toddler time where he wanted to spend all his time with me, didn't want to do anything by himself. And at the same time, he also wanted to be fiercely independent and do everything by myself. And I talked a little bit about the struggles that we had and how we managed to try and introduce encouraging independent toddler play. You see, sometimes we look at others and there's something to be said for the way children are raised in other countries. Not in every way or all things, but it is interesting nonetheless when we see how other parents are doing the art of parenting in another place on another stage, and it almost seems like another time, helps us to get some really good perspective. So if I take this extract from a wonderful website called African Babies Don't Cry, and this was dated October the 8th, 2012, and it's called Fostering Independent Play in Young Toddlers. I'm quoting here. It says in the article, Dr. Laura Markham has written a retaliating article on why we shouldn't be so quick to put French parents on a pedestal. That is worth a read. However, she too agrees that they have had the right when it comes to one quality the French possess, according to Druckerman, is that they allow their children to learn to occupy themselves. I'm buying this part of Druckerman's pitch, and guess what? The French don't let children under the age of 3 watch any TV. Okay, I doubt they police parents, but it's frowned upon, and no programming is allowed for them because it's thought that young children should not be watching. My experience is that when kids never get used to TV, they learn to occupy themselves. I also like Druckerman's line that French parents have firm rules about what they consider essential, but beyond that, they give their kid a lot of control. When kids have control over their own time, they learn to occupy themselves. End quote. The two articles that were referenced there, about the retaliating article and the one that references about children under 3 in France don't watch TV, are from ahaparenting.com/blog, and that post was called Are French Parents Better or Do They Just Spank More? And the second article is from ecochildsplay.com, and that's called The French Ban TV for Children Under 3. To read the full post on African Babies Don't Cry, then go over to africanbabiesdontcry.com, and of course that title is Fostering Independent Play in Young. So I know at this stage some of you are thinking, well, I know my child watches a lot of television, and you're thinking, well, maybe I should reduce the television or just take out the television completely and they do something else. But that goes back to my previous point of when you take something away, you really have to have something to replace it so that you can enjoy the new habit and the new solution that's coming along. So if you continue listening, there'll be some ideas that we give you as we're going through this conversation that you could take away and you can try with your child. So before you just throw away the TV or reduce the TV, we have to have some solutions to put in there to make this work. Before we get to some of those activities that we can do, let's focus on how we can get our children to be more independent by using the space around us. When we think about space and the stuff that we've got, just look around at where you are right now, what stuff your children has, and the space that they've got to be able to play. Are there too many things? Does it make it hard for them to see what they're going to play with, for them to be able to pull out things and be creative and independent themselves? Maybe your child's not crawling or moving yet and they're a baby. How are they able to be independently playing? Is their place cluttered? Do they have lots of things that are about? Or are they able to focus on one or two things that are around them so that they can play with? Do you have open and bright spaces? Or is the walls filled with different pieces of paraphernalia? Maybe you've got lots of bookshelves, posters, wall decal. Maybe the windows have things on there too. Maybe you have lots of rugs, lots of books, lots of toys. How open is your space? Not how big is your space, but how open is your space? Can you see lots of white space or space? Is it bright and airy? Is there good natural light that's coming in at some place? If you want more advice on effective use of spaces indoors or outdoors, then you should pop on over to raisingplayfultots.com/89, where I talk to Dot Mail about what to consider when developing a creative play space. So if that's something that you would like to focus on, then pop on over and listen to that one. So we've talked a little bit about space and stuff. Let's talk about the nitty-gritty of getting our child to independent play. Now, most of us have spent a lot of time with our children, and this is fine. This is what we should be doing, spending time playing with our kids. But something has kind of got off balance here, where we think that we shouldn't spend no time with the children at all, that we think that we should be spending all our time with the kids, and when we're not with the kids, then they shouldn't be doing anything without us. Dependent play is absolutely fine because we need to be there to support them for play. We teach them how to play with items and we engage with stuff and we play with them and we extend the play and we get them to do all sorts of things, but we have to find a way of withdrawing. Some of those ways involve having natural items that allow a chance for the children to be creative themselves. And lots of natural items you can find just by going outside. And there are lots of resources online where you can buy lots of these items if you are not close by. Setting up scenarios like invitations to play where you leave a bunch of items that aren't really related to each other in a big way together for the children to discover is something that all children absolutely love. If you've never done an invitation to play, then I would really encourage you to search for that and find some really good examples to get your ideas going and get going with some invitations to play. If you're already doing invitations to play, then maybe you want to do something that encourages them to play a little further with the idea that they've got there. Often you watch the children at play and you notice that they are really drawn to something. Maybe your child is like mine, who likes cars and vehicles and anything that's like that. So your invitation to play might combine two or three different items that you know that they really love, along with something that they've never really done before, or something that's totally unrelated. Play invitations are a lot more than just dump and run. It's not that you just grab a few things and just dump them on the table and then you go off and do an activity and hope that they will be entertained and engaged for quite a bit. Some children that works with, and you know your child whether that will work with them or not. Sometimes dumping and running does work with your child because they just need that space or they're really creative and they absolutely love it. Certainly young children and treasure baskets love that dump and run where you have a basket of items and you just leave them to it and they are so curious that they want to be creative and see what's over there and pull it out and explore. With the dependent play, when you are with them and you're teaching them and sharing things, you're giving them lots of encouragement, lots of praise, but you're not overpraising and you're not doing the types of praise that isn't helpful for them. If you want to know a bit more about play, then look at show number 86, raisingplayfultots.com, show number 86, where we talk about praise there. And yet sometimes when we have this dependent play, when we are teaching and sharing and working together and playing, we can start to have a battle of wills. They want to do something, we want to do something else. We start to get some defiance and we get some craziness that's going on. We talked a little bit about that craziness and trying to be positive when they're grumpy and you're grumpy in show number 93. And when we talked about conscious discipline. So if this is a struggle for you, then pop on over to that show and listen there for that. Because if we sit with them and for 2 minutes we have an activity with them, that is great. Something that we should celebrate. Because tomorrow when we do this type of activity, we might get them further to 2 minutes 30. Or maybe it's 5 minutes is the great time that they use with everything. The next time it might be 9 minutes. And we achieve that by just extending the play a little bit. So let's say we have left out Play-Doh. Now my son, we have had a love struggle with Play-Doh over time, my oldest one. He wasn't keen on it too much, but he was curious about it, but then kind of shrank back from it. And there came a time where he would love to have a plastic knife and would just cut strips. He would flatten the Play-Doh with his hand and just keep smacking it until it was this big pad of Play-Doh. Didn't want to use a roller or anything else, and just had a plastic knife and used to cut long strips from top to bottom all the way down. That's all he wanted to do. Then he'd kind of smush it back together and then cut it into long strips. Well, as you can imagine, I got the Play-Doh out for him, gave it to him. I don't think I got halfway across the room before he'd said, "I'm done, I've finished." He'd done his strips. You could see that. You know, what was I supposed to do? I think that must have been a record, 1 minute or 1 minute and a half that he had to play with it. So taking the time to think of something that I could do with him that would encourage him to go longer. So I went back over and I said, "Oh, look at this. They can go into snakes." And I pushed one of the lines off and rolled it into a snake. I curled the snake and started to make a shape. I made an O. And then I said, "Oh, is that a circle?" And we talked about it. And he began to see that you could move it around. And then he would play for 20, 30 seconds more. The next time we got the Play-Doh out, I said, "I'm going over here for a minute, I'll be back." And as I watched, you could see that he did the same lines because that's what he wanted to do. But then he started to play and make a circle. And he realized that he could make a T. And he did that all by himself. And he came running over to tell me, "I've made a T." And he was very excited about that. So for him, it kind of opened up a new world. He thought he could do letters, perhaps. Letters that were familiar to him that he could do. So, okay, why am I telling this story? It's because it took a little time and a little thought from me to try and extend his play and get his play moving on a little bit more. It's not always as easy as that. And sometimes you have to keep trying lots of different things. But for us, extending his Play-Doh has got to a point now where he can do all sorts of different things. And just taking that little time to kind of work with him and to teach him, give him some ideas, has helped him to extend his play by himself. So it was kind of semi-independent play. We were working kind of together with that. So not just Play-Doh, but there are lots of other things that you can use when you're doing play. And I just mentioned the idea of semi-independent play. These are toys and activities that need some input from us, maybe. It's probably suited when we're around or in the same room. We can be called upon to join in. We can help the kids, or we can play with the kids, or we can leave them to it. There's some brilliant ideas for semi-independent play, which lots of us transition through this time. We use it as well. You can find ideas from toddlerapproved.com, who has a post called "Favorite Toddler Toys for Semi." And she's referencing semi-independent play. Some other activities that you could think of are busy bags and quiet time activities. Spending a little time looking at and developing these activities are priceless. Priceless, I tell you. Spend a little time looking at the variety. If you've never done this, then I would go onto Pinterest, because that's my favorite place to go and look at a wide variety of things, and put in the search bar "busy bags" or "quiet time activities" and just look at the pictures that you've got there. Amazing. So there are a completely simple and easy activities that you can put together in an afternoon. You can have bags and bags, so you can share these with your friends, or you can just have them ready for yourself. Great opportunities to develop independent play with activities you can just give to your children and that they can have a try at it. If you're looking for a link, then I've got allourdays.com, where she has "Busy Bags Quiet Time Activities series." He has a whole series on them. So if this is something that you're really into and you want to look at different ones, then I would suggest you pop on over to her. If not, check out Pinterest for a whole wide range. So we've looked a little bit about dependent play, where we play with the children. We've moved into semi-independent play, where we play with them a little bit and we're trying to transition out of that. And the last part of this section I wanted to talk about is the "I am bored" jar. Many different ways of doing this. My favorite way is to have those big lollipop sticks. tongue depressors, whatever you want to call them, and actually write on there names of things for the children to do. Now, lots of our children can't read, and you're thinking, what's the point in writing these down? They can't read what it is. But, you know, we had a fun afternoon doing this when the children were quite young. I was fed up and frustrated that they were constantly coming to me as a source for what can I do? How can I do this? And so we just wrote on strips of paper all the favourite things that we like to do, and we just sat for ages and ages, and they ran around the house and looked at toys and looked at things. We did this huge, huge list. I cut it up into pieces, and we put it into a container, and any time that they said, I'm bored, I don't know what to do, I could say, bring me one thing from that jar, or as they learned to read, I would say, go read one thing from that jar, or I would dip in myself. The beauty of this idea is that we are busy. We're busy parents, we're busy people. And when kids come up to us and say, I don't know what to do, I'm bored, we know that our response should be, oh, I would never be bored. I'm sure you can find something to do. But more often than not, we want to help them. And even though we know that we could do other things, there is another way. And that's using the activities that we have around us. Because goodness, we have lots of things that they can do. And sometimes we just need reminding of all those fun activities. So even for us to be able to just reach over and grab something out and remember a long lost toy, a long lost activity, and be able to give them to the child or say, why don't you try this? That's really cool. If you put in board jar or container on Pinterest, you'll see so many really clever ways that people have taken this. I like the lollipop sticks in a can, and we keep ours on the windowsill, easy access. It's great for anybody else that happens to come round to the house and they're thinking of what they can do with the kids. Although I have seen people take things out and put them back and say, I'm not doing that activity. I want to do something else. So I will warn you about that. Only put activities in there that you really want to do, or just dip them back in if you're not happy with the one that comes out. So you have all these activities that are dependent, semi-independent, and completely independent activities that you've written down now with the iron board jar. There's no point in having an activity if the kids can't get to them. So this is what we're moving on to next: a place for everything and access for everything. Do you keep things in a low cupboard, a kitchen cupboard? Do you have a drawer set out? Do you set up areas where trusted resources are easily within their reach? Are there areas within your home where well-used resources are there for us? So like a scissor area and a glue area where we can reach the glue and the scissors really easily, but hey, we don't want the kids to have big access to that all the time without us knowing, because hey, we know that they will be painting with the glue in places that we just don't want them to. We have a shoe rack that we have on the back of our door, and inside of it is labeled with all the different things that you can have so that they can go and easily pick up things that they need. So we've got pencils, pens, string, pins. What else have we got? We've got rubbers, we've got sellotape, we've got, what else have we got? Tongue depressors, we've got those pom-pom things. And so all of those are easy access. It's really low down. We put it on one of those plastic hooks, and it's low down so all the children can reach it. But, oh, and glue, the stick glue. But I also have all the other white glue that you can pour, and other different types of scissors and other things out of reach. Things like the Sharpie marker. Hello, we love the Sharpie marker. But goodness me, when children get hold of that and you're not there, or maybe I should speak for my children, when they get hold of it when I'm not there, that pen goes everywhere and it's a real chore to get it off. So that's up. And so if they want to use it, yes, you can in this room with me. The same with the white markers. The board markers, what's those, dry erase markers, they're up there too. So actually establishing a place for those well-used, but they can't have them all the time, resources that we have to be around in easy access is really important, as well as things that they need to use and be able to pull out in easy access for them too. childhood101.com has a really good post about encouraging independent play, and she talks a lot about accessibility and toys as well, because it's not just being able to pull them out, it's how we see them and how we view them and what containers we put them in. And that really references back to the beginning, where we say, how many toys are enough toys, and do we have too many? You have to ask yourself, do you have a kid-friendly home where things can be found, whether you're the main caregiver or a family member that's popped over or a babysitter or a friend? Think about that for a little while. If somebody else came into the home, not you if you're the main caregiver, maybe it's your spouse or your partner or a friend that's babysitting or your mother-in-law that's popped over to look after the kids, would they be able to find the paper that they love to write on? Would they be able to find the mark-making dot pens that Nicole was talking about last week? Can they find the puzzles or the sticker books that they need to keep them calm after they've had a really high time running around the house? Are they under things, stacked behind things, in the loft? Sometimes we sabotage ourselves. We have the right intentions, we have all the right stuff, but it's just not in easy to reach places. Because to get the thing out involves far too much work versus the amount of time playing with it, so it just doesn't come out. We had a good example of that. We have an art easel that we absolutely love. It was a birthday present for one of my children when they were two. Absolutely brilliant. Getting it out, clipping the things to the side, putting the paint pot containers on it, clipping the big paper that goes with it. I always had it in a downstairs in the basement or in the garage or somewhere else or behind something. So to get that out and then to be dealing with the paint and everything, it could take a good 5 minutes from, I would like to do some painting, to here's a paintbrush, go at it. And you know what's coming next. They would paint for moments, a minute or two, and then they'd finished. We'd maybe change the paper out a couple of times, but within 5 minutes, it was done. And so eventually you started to think, it takes me 5 minutes plus to get that stuff out. And they're not even at it for 5 minutes. So you just start thinking, what's the point? So that thing gets put away and you don't deal with it. But I got around that by, during the summer, that art easel was out a lot. It was out in the garden. It just stayed out. It was fine where it was. We'd bring it into the kitchen if we needed to. But we learned to walk around that problem so that it was out. I didn't have to keep getting it out. And that for us worked because my kids love mark making. It's their one of their creative things that they absolutely love to do. And I felt badly that I couldn't keep it out because it wasn't working for us. They didn't spend enough time. So now having it out really worked for us because there was time and space. So kind of thinking about it in a different way. One last thing about a place for everything and access is the passive media that is in our homes. It's really easy to grab a DVD and just plop it on because we know where the DVDs are. We have a place for those. And that goes to the conversation that we just had about making sure that we have a kid-friendly home where things are accessible. Paper looks really nice when it's in the nice book, in the nice container, underneath the cupboard or inside the drawer, out of sight. But it's a lot harder to get to that, but it's a lot easier to get to the DVD because we know exactly where that is and it's accessible because we know, because we need it or we want it. Discouraging passive media and activities and encouraging engaging ones where you can interact, DVDs where they are talking, screens where things are moving and that you are commenting and working with them. We really aren't big media and screen family, but I know lots of families are working on finding a way to make this work in their family. And the way to do that is to really think about how are we making our children independent? How are we really focusing on less passiveness and more engagement? And so if we know where our paper and pens and all of those creative things are, it's just as easy to grab those as it is to grab a DVD. So if you think now about those of you that enjoy using DVDs or feel that you're using DVDs too much, are you able to grab the DVD in the same way that you're able to grab some of the other creative things that are inside of your house? And if not, maybe you need to find a way of displaying those or having them out, cupboards, storage, containers, places that you can just grab those to. So let's move on to choices. Now you have thought of moving your child and transitioning them through from dependent play to semi-independent play to independent play, we have to think about the power of choices. Children will always say, I don't know what to do. I can't do this. This is too hard. And being able to have a few choices really helps them through this dilemma. Being able to give them two options, especially when they're really young, gives them a chance to choose, makes them feel that they're in control. And if you've given them two choices that you're happy about, you know, everybody feels happier. So maybe you're saying, if we go back to the Play-Doh situation, you know, hey, why don't you try some Play-Doh? And we have some paper here as well. So you can do some Play-Doh over here. Look, we've got some new little cutters. All here, there's some paper over here. And I found that big orange marker pen that you were talking about the other day. Which one would you like to do? And you kind of show it to them, they can see, they can choose. Either one you don't mind them doing. And in fact, they might go on to the second choice afterwards as well. Older children could perhaps have maybe three choices, but you really can tell that difference yourself, whether they need one choice or more than one choice or more than two or three choices. So we're working on trying to get our children to be more independent in their play. I don't want you to come away with the idea that all play should now be independent. It's just today's focus, we are focusing on independent play. Independent play is one aspect of playful parenting and playing with our children and raising a playful top. So with that said, let's have some ideas. Now, Nicole gave us tons and tons of ideas Nicole from Activity Mum gave us tons of ideas in show number 132 that you can take to all different levels. So they're open-ended ideas. It doesn't matter whether you had babies or toddlers or whether you have preschoolers or children that are just entering kindergarten. You can take the activity and make it a little harder, a little easier, or change it up for it to work. So if you've not checked out that show, she has some gems in there. And one of them was contact paper that I was really surprised about. You know, that sticky back plastic stuff that you cover books with, actually turning it upside down so the sticky side is up, you can stick a whole load of stuff to that. She also talked about stickers, and not just the stickers where you take them out, but the actual background of the stickers, and a whole host of other activities that children can do independently. We can teach them how to do that independently. We've got old magazines, junk mail that come into the house. Most of us now have recycling bags, all good places full of paper and cardboard and things that we can use scissor skills on. Things that we don't care that they can cut up, tear up, pull, shred, scrunch together, make noise with, ruffle, all sorts. And when they're done, we just put them in the bin. All done. Sometimes you're looking for activities to do with one young child while you're trying to do something else with the older child. Yeah, we've all been there. The other little kid is trying to get in and do it, and you want to do one thing with one and one another. And yeah, heaven help you if you have three or four children, because you have all sorts of things to kind of sort out at the same time. So you kind of learn how to multitask and find something that will work for each one. But it does take a little setup sometimes to do that. And createwithkids.com has 5 quiet toddler activity ideas for independent play. Those ideas really help, especially if you have a child that you're trying to work with that's, say, a little older, and a really young child that wants to be part of what's going on and needs your attention too. So choosing your time for independent play really depends on whether they've done it much before, maybe how tired they are, and if they're hungry. So it depends on a whole host of different things. Like lots of our parenting experience, it's trying to find things that work and trying them at different times. Sometimes it'll work the first time, sometimes it won't. But we keep trying at different times and see what it works, what works and what doesn't. So over on Octavia and Vicky, there's a lovely insight into developing creative play when she says, break it up. And she says, I find that straight after Pebble and I have spent an hour or so playing and crafting or playing at the park, that I can much more easily get a break to catch up on jobs I need to get done. I try to give her a big dose of mummy, then a little break by herself, 20 minutes or so, with a fun activity, then another little dose of mummy. And there are more gems like this on her blog at octaviaandvicky.com. If you look for the post on how to encourage independent play. Thanks. So now it's over to you. I've given you some ideas, some food for thought, places to go to read more and learn more. Now comes your time for some action. It's no time now to be feeling guilty about how much you've done in the past. It's time to do something this week. Time to make changes. You know whether you are a parent that allows a lot of independent play or whether you know in your heart of hearts that you really know that they should be doing a little bit more. No more beating yourself up about it. Let's see if we can find a way through this and move them through some of these stages to get them playing a little bit more independently. So I want you to find a time in this next week of hearing this show and block some time for some you training. So what is you training? It can be 10 minutes or shorter or longer if you would like to. I chose 10 minutes because that's really doable and a manageable amount of time. And frankly, if you're going on Pinterest, you really don't want to be spending too much time there because you can get sucked in and find out that lots of your time has gone away. Have your child in mind. Choose one of your children. It doesn't matter which age they are. Choose one of them and let's focus on that one child because you want to really think about their independent play, how they are doing it and what they can do. Let's choose baby steps with this. We can do the other children another week you can focus on it. You can go back and do this whole step with another child. So choose a few activities you want to help them go from dependence to semi to independent play. And you could choose any order of that. Maybe you want to go from dependent play to independent play or semi-independent play to independent play. Really up to you and your child. What's your next step? You have to choose something that's developmentally appropriate. We've mentioned a bunch of ideas here, and in the show notes, there'll be a link to a few other places there that you can look for articles and resources. Of course, you have previous shows on Raising Playful Tots that we've mentioned, and if you go to the show notes, you've got lots of other shows to reference there. We've also talked about Pinterest, so you've got plenty of places to go and find some developmentally appropriate activities for your stage and your age. Think about what they do with this activity right now. When you have your child and you're doing this one activity, what are they doing? And then think about what the next step you would like it to be. So an example for my Play-Doh one was that he had the Play-Doh and he was cutting them in half. And I wanted him to be able to do more than just keep cutting them in half. So we had a few steps in there. We made some snakes, showed him how to make snakes and roll it a little bit, turned it around into a circle. So it wasn't about if he couldn't make a snake, he could still bend that shape into a circle. He soon cut it again in half and made it into a T. Really simple. Zip, let's do something else. He was moving on to the next thing. The next step was to do something with the strips. And my backup plan was to bring one new piece of equipment. It was this star shape that made a print on it. And so I had that with me. So I had some ideas about what I wanted to do with the strips, and I worked out a piece of equipment that I could have with me so that I could use. So it took a few minutes of thought to think, okay, let's work with the Play-Doh because I really wanted to be playing more with Play-Doh. I know that he does this already. What could I do to help him do something else that's simple enough, that's not going to be too difficult. Maybe I can find a piece of equipment because I need a backup plan in case the one thing I decided isn't going to work. And I set it aside on the windowsill so it was ready for the next Play-Doh session whenever that session came. For me, the windowsill works. I can see it. I can find it. It's really quick and easy. The next step for us would be to be more intentional about when we will be backing away and letting them have some independent play. Talked earlier about some of us are able to do this invitations to play, leave these items out. They come along, they do it. Some of us sit down and play with our kids and we know that we could get up and go and do something else. I don't know, maybe we're having too much fun, or maybe we just aren't sure about how to withdraw at that time and allow them to play because we're scared also that they're going to kick off and start crying or complaining, or they just want our attention. We know our children, and not all times this will be the great time to do it, but I want you to try and test different ideas. Maybe you've left things out and you've let them discover it and it's not been working for you. So go back and test this. Work out, you know, if I leave them, if I play with them for a minute and a half, then I start to withdraw, that's going to work because usually I do 5 minutes or 4 minutes. You know, try some different ideas out. See what happens. See if you can withdraw from this supportive play. It's good for them and it's good for us to know how long we're going to be sitting there for. This is just a challenge. This is just a trial. It won't always be like this. But we have to experience this resistance, this difference, trying to allow them to have some independent play. We don't have to go to the other room, but we have to try and busy ourselves doing something else so that the kids know that we are doing something else and they can really get immersed and enjoy and love what they're doing. And perhaps I should add there that we don't run back to them straight away when they find that they've hit a roadblock. So I'd like you to try and do those activities maybe, let's say 3 to 6 times during that 1 week and see if you can build a rhythm of independent playtime so that it becomes a habit for you, something that you are really trying, and it's a focus that you have. There'll be specific times in your schedule during the week where you are focusing on trying to get your children to independent play. So there it is. I would love to know how you get on. We're intentionally focusing on independent play today. We're not perfect and we're not expecting miracles, but we're purposefully adjusting to the needs of our children and giving them the time and the space to develop without us. Because we know it's needed and necessary, but time doesn't always allow us to really think these things through and actually spend time allowing them to be independent, focusing on the things that they really enjoy and giving them good opportunities to try out independent play. If you're on Instagram, if you're on Twitter or Google Plus and you would like to share what you've been doing, maybe you want to drop me a line and let me know. Maybe you've got a picture that you want to share with everybody so that we can see. Use the hashtag #SimpleParenting. That's #SimpleParenting, all one word. And we can check out what we're all doing and encourage each other and see what we're doing, because we can find the activity that we're all doing there. So if you're on Instagram, then search for Simple Parenting and see what people are doing. Or if you're on Twitter or if you're on Google Plus, they're really good, easy ways to do that. Maybe it's the final version of an activity that they've been working on for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 20 minutes or half an hour, and you want to share that with all of us because you are really happy that they've managed to do that. Maybe it's a sneak shot of them playing independently that you've managed to get around the corner and you can see that they're doing that little bead item that they've been wanting to do, and you can see the concentration and you can see their thoughts. You know, capturing those golden moments of success really, really helps us through the plodding, sometimes desperate times that we all experience with our children. I know some of you are thinking, I could hear you already, my child won't do that. can't do that, doesn't ever do that, never has done that. No way, Jose, will they be doing any of that independent play stuff. This is just the beginning. Just the beginning. Like the shampoo bottle, this process is rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So at the end of this challenge, the week you've been focusing on independent play with yourself and your child, teaching your child and teaching yourself to allow the struggle there is. No magic wands, or from now on your child will forever play independently. This challenge is just a focus, just like spring cleaning and sticky toffee pudding. There will be and there are other play focuses that we should have, or is that foci? I think it is foci. What have you got to lose in trying? We know that independent play is valuable and necessary, and we know our own families, and we know if this is something we've neglected or haven't had time to focus on because of other things. So apart from using the hashtag #simpleparenting, feel free to drop by on this episode, which is Raising Playful Tots 133. So that's raisingplayfultots.com/133. That's the numbers. And scroll down to the show notes where you can leave your comments about anything that we've talked about in this show, your experiences of independent play, the things that you've done. You can share how it's gone, how it's going. You can share your pictures, your struggles, your celebrations, big or small. Come over to the Slow Parenting, Simple Parenting community, or let me know by email. All the contact details are on the website at raisingplayfultots.com for all of the links that we've talked about in today's show. You'll find them there at raisingplayfultots.com/133. Or you can just rewind the show and listen. So that's it for the show today. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Playful Tots. And I really enjoy the conversations that we're having on Twitter and Facebook and the stuff that we get to talk about in the Slow Parenting and Simple Parenting community. It's fantastic. If you like the show, please help spread the word by telling your friends, leaving a review for us on iTunes, giving us a thumbs up on Stitcher or your favourite podcast mobile app. You can find us on Pinterest, you can like us on Facebook, and you can join us in our Slow Parenting, Simple Parenting community, where we discuss more of the things that matter to us from the show, from our parenting, from our own experience. None of us are perfect, and we're all learning, and we're all doing the best that we can, and sharing and helping each other with the knowledge that we have. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 133. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.